First name, John Deput Ben. Are we good to go?
Good morning, Chair. Yes, Chair.
Okay. All right. No, that is fine. Let me take this opportunity, colleagues, to welcome you back. This is our first meeting of 2021, after what has been a very long recess. But I hope we've all managed, albeit the difficulties that the country is facing, that we have got insufficient rest to hit the road running. So I wish you all the best and for 2021 and for us to have a continued healthy working relationship as a cohesive force and as a formidable force of a united committee in the cause of the national duty that we've been called upon to do. So colleagues, welcome to 2021, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, on the progress reports and updates on 8 bridge-related matters. As you'll recall, we had finalized our report. We have been to Bay Bridge, and we have to, of course, keep that matter on our radar. Just 2 matters, colleagues, I'd request that you keep at the back of your mind, and then maybe we will look at them at the end of the meeting. The first one is that we, as colleagues, have been submitting this recommendations for what needs to be priority here in terms of focus areas and focus departments and entities. The House Chairperson has been in contact with me to inform me that we are being requested to prioritize as a committee the PPE-related investigations, which will be coming from the AG, the SIU, and other law enforcement agencies, so that Parliament can be able to process all those issues and look at where, in terms of how we run that parallel to our normal program. As we deal with the and fraud, which has characterized PPE and expenditure. Of course, that was work we were doing. So related to that, yesterday I sent a letter through to the Minister of Finance and visited it to Minister of Health and Acting Minister in the Presidency, requesting them to, as we already announced before, calling for a public adjudication process for the storage and distribution of the vaccine which arrived yesterday. As you'll recall, there's been announcements to that effect, and also National Treasury is considering deviation for that. So we do need to put in place preventative measures to ensure that it does not fall into the realm of corruption as well. So that letter will be circulated to members as well during the course of the meeting. But I think it's important that we keep an eye on what happens. So colleagues, let me, in welcoming you and thanking you for being here, welcome Minister Delil and her team, who are going to be presenting to us on the PP, on the Bay Bridge matters. And then we will take it from there. So Minister, good morning and welcome. And colleagues, if we are all good and there are no matters at this stage, I will humbly request that we then dive right into it and then get a presentation and then field questions, and then we'll deal with any other housekeeping matters at the end of the meeting. So Honourable Minister, over to you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I want to wish all of you a blessed and safe 2021. And we do look forward, and we are committed to continue to work with SCOPA. SCOPA plays a very important role of accountability, and I just want to assure Honourable Chair and Members that we are committed to that. We are here today, Chairperson, to give feedback to the committee on the report of the committee dated the 17th of November. And I'm joined by the acting DG, Faisal, and then also Sasa Saban, who is the Deputy Director General for RAISE. And then we also have today Frans van Wyk. He is from the Department of Architectural Services. And he will also present later on, Chairperson, some of the work that we have done in December around the fence. So without any further ado, Chairperson, through you and your permission, I would like to call on the acting DG to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Minister. That is fine. Just one request from Parliamentary Communication Services, colleagues, if you are on the platform and speaking, please turn on your camera because they are streaming this proceeding live on Parliament's protocols. And I'll request that if you are not speaking, to keep your camera off and to remind all of us again of the ground rules. Let's keep muted, colleagues. Right, Acting DG, over to you. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and members of the committee. Our presentation focuses mainly on the recommendations of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts pursuant to your visit during September to the Beitbridge Border Post and your site inspection. So we focus mainly on that, and we conclude by talking about our medium to long-term strategy to deal with the borderline. So, Chairperson, without wasting any time, I'm moving on to slide number two. And our purpose is to implement and to present to the committee the implementation of our recommendations, as mentioned, in terms of the report of SCOPA issued on the 17th of November, 2020, to discuss the ongoing processes in this regard, as well as our continued engagements with the committee to keep the committee abreast of developments with respect to implementation of those recommendations, and then to go into what we call the integrated borderline fencing project and patrol roads that is currently being conceptualized and around which we'll be engaging the Departments of Home Affairs and DOD in particular to conceive and implement going forward. Moving on to slide three, Chairperson, just a bit of a short timeline. We reflect that this particular project and the investigation and recommendations of SCOPA that ensued, these are pursuant to the declaration of the national disaster in March 2020 and the identification of the Beitbridge border post as a hotspot identified by the Department of Defense for illegal immigration that gave rise to the construction of a fence in that particular vicinity. And due to general concerns out there in the public domain, as well as by the executive in Parliament, with the fitness for purpose and the cost associated with the fence, the Minister requested the Auditor General on the 20th of April 2020 to conduct an investigation in this regard. On the 25th of April 2020, the Minister then also requested that all payments to the contractor and the principal agent with respect to this particular project be stopped. And then the Minister at the same time also requested the Governance, Risk and Compliance Branch to investigate the procurement as well as all processes related to implementation and construction of the border fence. And the branch was then assisted by the SIU as well as Built Environment Specialists, which were selected and drawn from the PICC. Now, the investigation identified a lack of planning, procurement irregularities, some non-compliance with SCM prescripts, poor quality of materials used for construction, as well as in particular the excessive project costs. Pursuant to this, on the 3rd of June 2020, the department appeared before SCOPA on the procurement and implementation of this project, where the committee then sought more clarity on the project, and in particular, the committee then sought more information on the outcome of the investigation. This led to an engagement with the committee on the 25th of October, where we appeared before SCOPA together with the SIU, and a presentation was then made on the findings of the Beitbridge Border Fence Project Investigation commissioned by the Minister. SCOPA then conducted a site visit also on the 4th to the 6th of September 2020 and made certain findings in this regard. And on the 4th of September, the DPW, the PICC, as well as the SIU briefed the joint committees on the, of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, COPA, and the Committee on Home Affairs on the findings of this investigation. And that resulted then in the site visit being conducted the day thereafter. On the 6th of October 2020, DPW appeared before SCOPA, where progress on the recommendations from the investigation reports of the committee were presented. And that followed a site visit and a report on the 17th of November, where the recommendations of the committee was issued and a request was made for the department to respond with progress in that regard. So that's just a bit of a timeline, and then we go into substantive issues on slide number 4. Section 8 deals in particular with the recommendations and the department's response in that regard. And I move on to slide number 5, Chairperson and members of the committee. The first recommendation pertains to the Memorandum of Understanding, and the recommendation is that the MOU is reviewed to clarify the roles and responsibilities of the Department of Defense, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and the Department of Home Affairs. In this regard, the MOU to clarify the roles and responsibilities between the respective departments, DPW and DOD in particular, is in draft. The department engaged the DOD on the 11th of December 2020, and the matter has also been placed on the agenda of the JCPS cluster of the 18th of February 2021 to discuss a holistic approach to deal with the border line fence, as well as an integrated infrastructure solution. Further to that, the department is scheduled to meet the Department of Home Affairs during the second week of February to discuss our relationship with the Border Management Authority. In the process, the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure also met with the Minister of Defense on the 26th of January 2021 to discuss cooperation between our respective departments. And in particular, the engagement between our infrastructure project management branch and the South African National Defense Force. And there was agreement that DPW will, in due course, issue a request for information into the public domain on border management solutions. So, Chairperson and members of the committee, the MOU and the understandings between the respective departments is rich in terms of the discussions and arrangements currently unfolding to enable us to work towards a joint solution with respect to protecting the borderline. Moving on to recommendation number 2, that all physical defects are rectified in line with all applicable regulations. What the department has done is to commission a technical report, and that has been finalized, and the team recommended that the fence can be repaired under certain conditions, and these repairs will consist of replacing the structural support that were removed where the fence has not collapsed. I'd like to ask my colleague, Mr. Frans van Wyk from Architectural Services, to share more information at this point in time. I'd like to also mention that the contract with the contractor for the construction of the fence did not include a post-contract maintenance plan. So Mr. van Wyk will then share the perspective of the condition assessment and how this possibly can be managed going forward. If the presenter, Mr. Heinz, can please allow the drill down to Mr. van Wyk to take us through the site visit conducted by the department and the condition assessment results. Mr. van Wyk, please, if you could.
Good morning. Thank you, Acting DG, and through you, Chair. In December 2020, delegation of the Architectural Services Unit visited Whitebridge with the intention of doing a survey of the condition of the fence. The survey was done in the form of photo documentation of all of the breaches or damages to the fence. And in order for us to be able to comprehend and log all those incidents to the fence, we saw that there were two major groups of damages, two different kinds. The first kind is where the fence was damaged due to people trying to gain access through the fence. And in the second group, there is actually linear damage to the fence due to portions of the structure of the fence being removed. So those are the two categories of damages. If we look at the legend here, you'll see that this blue icon and the red icon represents major damages where there are breaches or where there are linear damages. And of course, there are then intermediate and minor damages also reported. So if we can then move on towards the aerial photographs, we have logged all of these photographic images or incidents to an aerial photograph in order to get a visual representation of where what kind of damage occurred to the fence. You'll see four sides. This is the far western portion of the fence and only half of that western portion. We'll see that there are some major breaches happening along sections that is more isolated, and where there's a farming community, for instance, we see less breaches. We also see some linear damage along portions of the fence where it is more isolated and where the fence line actually veers away from the river into more mountainous topography. If we can move on to the section of the western fence closest to the Bight Bridge border post itself. This red circle represents the border post itself, and the, again, on the section to the west of the border post, all these blue icons represent major breaches in the fence. And again, where we have more mountainous terrain, as we saw the overlap in the previous slide, we see linear damage to the fence. We can move on to the eastern portion of the fence. The immediate eastern portion next to the Bight Bridge border post, we see intermediate damage where there are a lot of basically gaps and holes in the fence where people gained access through the fence. Further away, we see more linear damage to the fence. And if we move on to the far eastern side and the portion of the fence, we notice that as soon as we go into the more mountainous terrain, we again see linear damage to the fence where portions of the structure of the fence was actually removed, with some other damage to the fence also gained in order to gain access through the fence. So there's also a full photographic record of all of these incidents of the fence, and that was our outcome on what we found on site. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Wyk. And thank you, Chairperson, for allowing us to divert there. To conclude this particular condition assessment, ultimately how we deal with the fence going forward is dependent on our engagements with the Department of Defense and agreement with how they want to approach the border security in that particular vicinity, given the need to combine sensors together with the border fence as well as robust patrols within the area. So that will ensue as we discuss with the Department of Defense. Moving on to slide number 6 and item number 3, the recommendation is a request for legal action to be taken against implicated companies and for processes to recover the money paid to be set in motion. In this regard, on the 17th of November 2020, the SIU instituted legal action against Magua Construction, as well as Prof. Team, the principal agent, with a special tribunal. And the main relief sought in this application is the declaration of invalidity of the contract concluded between DPW and the respondents, Prof. Team and Magua Construction, on the grounds that it was entered into in transgression of the relevant procurement processes. And the application was opposed by the respondent, and the matter was enrolled to argue jurisdiction, which was raised by the two companies at the point in limine. The two companies were raising a question of the jurisdiction of the SIU tribunal to hear this particular case. And this was heard on the 26th of January, 2021 in the tribunal. The parties are awaiting judgment. Summons for losses and damages suffered, as recommended by the committee, will be issued once the tribunal declares the contract invalid. The SIU on the 28th of September 2020 also referred evidence which points to the commission of an offence by the respondents and their directors to the National Prosecuting Authority. And this has been raised with us in terms of the act or the proclamation establishing the SIU. The SIU refers the criminal matters directly to the National Prosecuting Authority. And the NPA has acknowledged receipt, and we've been advised that the NPA is presently considering all the evidence and will shortly advise on its decision whether to prosecute or not. That is in regard to criminal action as well as civil recovery. Moving on to item number four. Item number four prescribes the department should write to National Treasury to request to blacklist the principal agent and the main contractor from doing business from government in terms of the Triple PFA 2017. And Chairperson, I want to mention that the department established in terms of Circular 40 of 2019, established a restriction committee within the department in compliance with the Triple PFA to set up an internal framework to consider evidence of companies that are in transgression of their contractual obligations on the department and therefore warrant restriction from doing business with government. The committee is made up of our SCM branch as well as legal services, as well as construction and real estate investment management services. These branches in particular, together with finance and internal control, considered evidence as to whether Magua Construction as well as Profteam should be referred to National Treasury for restriction from doing business with government. During that particular time, the committee requested further particulars, including the reports of the investigation to enable them to consider blacklisting, as well as to invite the two companies, which is part of the process. Both Magua Construction as well as Profteam need to be given the opportunity to make representations to the committee. This project is still in progress, and evidence is being submitted to the committee to consider for this particular purpose. And I'd like to deal, Chairperson, in the next section with the quantum of information requested by the restriction committee to enable them to make this decision. And I move on to item number five, the several contracts that the principal agent and the main contractor have with the department are terminated with immediate effect. Chairperson, at this time, we took counsel from our construction management branch and evaluated all the contracts that are awarded to both Profteam and Magua, and the conclusion was at this stage that the department has not identified any justifiable grounds to terminate the existing contracts, which are in progress. And these contracts have been duly awarded, and the companies are delivering in terms of their obligations in this regard. However, the department will review the contracts further, and as requested upon the instructions of our minister, to direct our internal audit unit to conduct a further evaluation of all the contracts issued to both companies to validate the representations made by our construction management branch. And we will then report to SCOPA during the course of the year upon the conclusion of the internal audit whether these findings support and endorse our construction project management view not to terminate or whether they provide an alternative viewpoint. We will engage in due course. The department is also seeking legal advice in parallel to this, whether the conduct of the respective companies in relation purely to the paid breach contract constitutes on its own sufficient grounds to seek termination of the remaining contracts with the department. This is what our legal services who have referred it to the state attorney, and we will hear from them in due course. We've recently only undertaken this request. Moving on to item number six. Item number six prescribes that a process of vetting of all supply chain management personnel should be initiated in the department In this regard, with the assistance of the State Security Agency, the department has vetted and issued clearance certificates for 160 SCM officials, and no official was denied a clearance. And a total of 252 SCM officials still need to be vetted. This includes expiring or re-vetting necessary, as well as officials who have not been vetted at all. We've been directed to complete this process by March 2022, and our security branch in the department has indicated that they are negotiating with the State Security Agency to do it in four tranches, so to divide the 250 into four tranches for completion by the end of March 2022. In accordance with the instructions of our executive authority, we've asked for the fast-tracking of this process. So we will keep an eye on that, Chairperson and members of the committee. Item number seven is that all reasonable steps are taken before monies owed to the state can be written off as irrecoverable. And in this regard, the department placed a moratorium on all payments to the service providers pending the legal recovery action before the SIU tribunal and will determine the amounts to be recovered through the court process. Through the SIU, we are claiming the full amounts paid to the service providers. The department will await the court outcome before concluding on recommendation number seven. Moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, and item number eight, and the consequence management against officials. And what I'd like to do is point out that 13 officials in all were recommended for disciplinary action in terms of the investigation, and two of the 13 officials are employed in terms of sections 12 and 12A of the Public Service Act. And in this regard, their disciplinary processes are not dealt with by the department itself. The disciplinary action against the Director General is being managed by the Presidency, while the disciplinary action against the Special Advisor of the Minister is dealt with by the Minister. In this regard, on the 9th of September 2020, Minister DeLille wrote to the Presidency, informing them of the findings and recommendations of the Faith Bridge Port Offence investigation. And the Presidency acknowledged this communication. And the late Minister Mthembu wrote to Advocate Bukela on the 16th of October to inform him that supplementary charges of misconduct relating to the Faith Bridge Port Offence would be added to his charge sheet. With respect to the minister's advisor, the minister served Ms. Whitehead with a letter in September 2020 informing her of the intended charges following the findings of the Bait Bridge Port Offence report. Ms. Whitehead acknowledged receipt of this letter. The minister requested the state attorney to appoint an initiator and chairperson for the disciplinary process, and both the initiator as well as the chairperson have been appointed by the Office of the State Attorney, and the initiator has prepared draft charges, and the matter is ongoing. Chairperson and members of the committee, moving on to the issue of the 11 officials in the department. The initiator and chairperson were appointed and have been at it for quite some time, and in this regard, the initiator is the prominent person in this aspect of the process, and notice of the provisional charges was issued to the 11 officials implicated and that I employed in terms of Section 8 of the Public Service Act. And since our last brief to the committee, a process was unfolding where the department requested written representations to all the 11 officials as to why they should not be charged. This was based on the provisional charges, which included the nature of the misdemeanors they are alleged to have perpetrated. All these officials, after considering the provisional charges, they requested further particulars in the form of additional information as well as documentation to enable them to make these representations. And further information was provided to these officials outlining the role each one of them has played. The officials were given a further 7 working days to provide the representations after requesting further particulars. And moving on to the next slide in the same item, all these representations were received by the department except for one employee who is still requesting further documentation, and his case is being dealt with by external legal firm on his behalf. The representations were considered by the state attorney and counsel appointed by the state attorney, who subsequently made recommendations to the department for the approval of what they refer to as progressive discipline against the employees, which is 8 of the employees, progressive discipline, and full discipline against the other employees, depending on the severity of the misconduct. So, Chairperson, in essence, the state attorney proposed that we issue sanctions against 8 of the officials based on their responses and on, in terms of their provisional charges, based on the responses as to why they should not be charged. The state attorney concluded that we should find them guilty and issue them with sanctions, 8 of them, while 3 should face full disciplinary hearing in this regard, given the gravity of their misdemeanors, as well as the nature of their responses and representations. Now, Chairperson, what transpired is the department then concluded that we would prefer to have full charges and full hearings against all 11 of the officials. And the state attorney has then been instructed to finalize charges in the first week of February so the hearings can ensue. So that is where we are with respect to consequence management against all 11 officials. Moving on to item number 9. The investigation reports are submitted to SCOPA on the 31st of December and thereafter monthly reports. And then there are also requests for quarterly reports. In this regard, the investigation report was officially submitted to the committee on the 12th of October. And going forward, the department will continue to provide written as well as verbal reports if required to the committee. And item number 10 talks to the need to integrate border security and recommends that the SANDF should deploy optimally to perform their mandate of border management and security. And in this regard, DPW has engaged the Department of Defense on the need to increase their presence on the borderline in terms of their own mandate, in terms of the Constitution. And this includes the ministerial action on the 4th of April 2020 at the time of the construction of the fence. And the DPW also communicated with the Secretary of Defense in this regard upon the completion of the handover of the fence on the 27th of April 2020, requesting the DOD to intensify patrols within the particular vicinity. So, Chairperson, that concludes the main areas of the recommendations, and then I move to the next slide. In terms of securing the borderline, we have what we call the integrated infrastructure solution to integrate the fencing and patrol roads and sensors, and we want to share this. And we talk to, on slide 12, presenter, if you could assist me, that any border fence initiative must be located in the context of this program in terms of an integrated national strategy between the key role players led by the Department of Defense. This also talks to the first recommendation of the committee regarding an MOU and integrating our initiatives going forward, driven by the needs identified by the Department of Defense. And moving on to slide number 13, and that particular map is representing 1,854 kilometers of our borderline between South Africa and Zimbabwe, 700 kilometers, South Africa and Lesotho, 600 kilometers, RSA, Eswatini, and Mozambique. There's a portion of 54 kilometers on the extreme right from Cozi Bay, moving on to Eswatini, that's 54 kilometers, and the additional 500 kilometers with Mozambique. And then this is part of the medium term, and the minister indicated that we don't have long-term solutions any longer. Everything is short-term, and at best, medium-term. But this is the solution in terms of the site clearance for integrated borderline fencing and patrol roads that are underway. And the department is on the verge of completing. And the construction of the border fence will then take place in 3 different phases, as follows on slide number 14. Phases 1, 2, and 3. We are at the moment in what we call the town planning or pre-planning phase, which is estimated for completion in June 2021. And this includes the entire site clearance process, which is broken down into further parts in the next slide, and includes the process for site identification, securing ownership, and establishing of appropriate land use rights, compliance with legislation, and removal of all restrictions that may restrict the development or use of a property, which means the construction of a border fence in an unencumbered way. The site clearance is also there to meet legislative as well as environmental requirements, due diligence, as well as to determine land availability and suitability for construction. So that's what this is about. It's what, as laypersons, we refer to in the department as a land feasibility study, before which any fencing project can commence. And the department is currently in the process of the town planning processes, the project, which is appended on the next slide, and an RFI will be issued to support the integrated borderline solution as conceptualized by DPW to engage the market on different types of border fence projects and security solutions. When we talk about integration between border fences as physical structures, sensors as electronic monitors, and human intervention in terms of robust patrol by the Defense Force. So that's what the pre-planning phase is about for June 2021. It establishes the platform to move on to phase number two, which is planning for an upgrade and redevelopment of the borderline fences for another 12 to 24 months. That talks to June 2022 to June 2023, and it talks to a process of design and specification development, costing of all specs and designs, and approval by the user, which is the DOD, and then we need to engage Treasury, talk about funding. And in this regard, as our infrastructure mandate, we are also considering working with the Infrastructure South Africa to gazette this project as a strategic project, to prioritize it for funding and implementation, given its national nature of its national need and priority. And then we'll move on to phase three thereafter. After the phase two project preparation, funding phase and design, we go on to construction, which will take another 2 to 3 years. So we're talking about reaching another 3.5 to 4 years before we see the full implementation of the border fence infrastructure solutions. And Chairperson, with your permission, on slide number 15, we are reflecting the nature of the different components of the site clearance process. And what one would see that first items number 1 to 13, we've effectively completed. And the remaining processes are there to complete by the end of June this year. And that will lay the foundation for our further discussions and moving into further processes. This part is critical. It also identifies exactly where the borderline is. So it's the prerequisite and the precursor to engaging in any border fence solution. So we are on that critical path. Chairperson, moving on to the recommendations, and we recommend that SCOPA notes the progress from the implementation of the recommendations included in the SCOPA report pursuant to the oversight visit during September, and the report dated the 17th of November, and to note the ongoing processes to effect these recommendations and our willingness and commitment to keep the committee informed, as well as the medium-term solution to develop an integrated borderline solution for border patrolling and to secure our borders and to create security along our border between the Republic and our neighbors in terms of the integrated border solution. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chair, are you there?
Yes, I am. My network is a bit of an issue.
Great, okay. Thank you very much. We'll start with the Honourable Van Minen, Honourable Mente, Honourable Hadebe, Honourable Somya. We'll, in that order. Or do you prefer that we take two and then we get responses and then come back so nothing gets lost? Maybe let's do that. Honourable Van Minen and Honourable Mente, you'll go first. We'll get responses and then we'll take the next two. I think we are doing good for time. So Honourable Van Minen, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and Happy New Year to everyone here. I have several questions on the presentation, starting with the first recommendation with the MOU, which I believe is in draft format. I just want to know how the cooperation between the various departments has been affected by the current lockdown of the border and the ban on travel through that border. Because obviously when one locks down the official methods of travel, one is going to find an increase in the informal traveling across borders, which is a concern. Linked to that, the ETA, the estimated time of decision-making on the repairs as well as getting the tenders out and actually affecting those repairs. What sort of time period are we looking at in that respect, particularly given the lack of the post-construction maintenance plan? I'd really like to know what is happening there. And also looking at the slides, I mean, it looks like extensive repairs. So how long is that going to take? And then linked to that, it connects to point number 10 in terms of the recommendations, the relationship with the Department of Defense regarding increasing patrols along that space, because we certainly did observe an enormous amount of opportunities for people to cross over. We've also discussed previously the issue with the Minister of Defence regarding the SNDF facilitating people moving through that fence. So one certainly would want to know what is happening with that. In terms of the blacklisting of MAGWA and Prof Team, if it's gone to the RCAA, what is the kind of timeline we're looking at in the assessment of the evidence? So we just want to know what's going to happen there in terms of moving forward with the timeline. And in terms of the investigations into the officials, including into Ms. Whitehead, the first week of February deadline that was set, does that also apply to that investigation? And then the last point, it's on the second presentation, given the plans for the fencing and the infrastructure solutions with the rest of the borders that we've been discussing. If it's going to take between 3 or 4 years to actually get that up and running, what are the interim methods that are going to be applied to deal with sort of border permeability and people potentially coming through with that? Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Honourable Van Minen. Honourable Mente.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Welcome to 2021, everyone. Chair, I'm going to need clarity. I'm not sure if any of us did understand the point. On point number two of the progress report, it talks to repairs of the fence. And I think that's where the other gentleman came in. My dilemma is, one, the fence that we went there to see. The fence we saw there was actually a residential fence, not a fence meant for a border. And that's as far as the SIU was concerned and as well as the report we received. Now, if they're going to repair, are they repairing the same fence that can be easily breached? Are they installing the very same type of a fence? And if that's the case, how different is it going to be from what we've seen? And for me, that will be a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And if you remember, Chair and the members of the committee, we saw three types of fences there. There were two old fences that were not in any shape or form similar to the new fence that's there. And those other two were according to the prescripts of a border fence. So I'm not sure what is being repaired, if we can be clarified there. Because if we are repairing the existing one, we are saying, no, let's just throw the money, it's going to be cut again and everything. People want to come through. And then on point number four, of the progress report. Pity that a Treasury did not give us a conclusive report in terms of its own findings. Because if that's the case, I don't think there has been a comparison of the DPW's findings to what Treasury's regulations are saying. At number four, you are saying the matter of restricting the service providers from doing business with government has been tabled with the Department's Restriction Committee and is currently considering the evidence which will be submitted to National Treasury in support of blacklisting the contractors. I'm very confused because there is regulations where they are clear in terms of what happens when service providers are breaching their same contract. So is the department saying there are no comparisons to what exists in terms of defining people who have service providers who have breached their own contracts? If you are going to be referring this black to National Treasury. And pity Chair, again, if National Treasury had given us a conclusive report, the last time the report was not concluded, if they had given us a conclusive report as to their own findings regarding the bait bridge expenditure, this would have been very clear. So I'm not sure whether there is no existing document or there is some form of another investigation that has to be taking place in terms of blacklisting people who are clearly breaching their own contract. And in terms of the evidence, you are saying you are not having another evidence on point five to actually stop other existing contracts of the same service provider who is not loyal, who is a thief, and has worked with officials in the department to embezzle the funds. I don't know what kind of evidence we are talking to. We will have to be very clear. I do not like a situation where we are going to be found complicit into lengthening a process that is not supposed to be that much longer. If you understand and you remember the SIU report and the findings, even of the department, the project was supposed to be 26 million. It was overpriced by 14 million. Who did that? The service provider. The prices of material were supposed to be 23 million. They were overpriced by 17 million. Who did that? Them. So if you are saying because the other projects which you've already implemented had no breaches, yet this particular one has so many breaches. And I remember at some point we asked if you can you prove that the other projects were not at the same mercy as this one in terms of inflation of prices. We did not get that report that assures us that in fact the other projects of the same company were in line with all the financial prescripts in terms of treasury and the regulations. So I'm not sure what kind of evidence you are talking about when you say you don't have enough evidence to stop the existing project. You want to say you're going to stop this particular project, yet you have existing projects with the company. And those existing projects are supposed to be stopped because they are not loyal. They've proven to be corrupt. We cannot continue as a state giving them more money. Thank you, Chair.
All right, let's get the responses to that first set of questions, and then Honorable Hadebe and Honorable Somlu will come in next.
Chair, can I come in? Because mine is in line with what Honorable Mente has raised.
Okay, that's fine. All right, no problem.
No. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and Honorable colleagues, and welcome. Compliments of the new season. By the way, Honorable Mente, I can hear your daughter screaming from where I am. Chair, I'm also concerned and very much concerned, especially what Honorable Mente has raised. On slide number 5, the recommendation number 2, that seeks to suggest, Chair, in terms of the technical condition report, that this fence can be repaired. Let me remind the colleagues that we went there, Chair. We have physically tested the strength and the quality of that fence. We have seen with our naked eyes that fence, Chair. That fence is easily breakable. It is easy to breach that fence effortlessly, Chair. It does not qualify to be called or regarded as a border fence. In fact, Honorable Mente is correct. When we were there, we were told that the specification used for that fence was meant to protect the buildings at Bay Bridge, not to be used as a border fence. So any suggestion or recommendation that seeks to suggest that that thing can be repaired, we are going to oppose it. We are vehemently opposed to that notion. And if the department are going to consider using its budget to give or allocate more funds towards the repair of that fence, that thing is tantamount to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we cannot, as this committee, Chair, accept such, unless we did not go there, unless we did not physically touch that thing. I do not want to justify it as a border fence or dignify it by calling it a border. It's an insult to the capabilities and the strength of our government to protect its citizens and its border if that thing is going to be called a border fence. And if we're going to sit here and accept as true when we have been there, that thing amounts to a border fence. I vehemently oppose, and I would like to get an understanding and a detailed report of that technical report that suggests to us you can repair that thing. When we were there, over 100,000 breaches. That clearly indicates to you that as time goes on, there will be more breaches, and there's nothing you can do to repair that thing. It needs to be replaced once and for all. Get a quality fence that can do its work. You can have all your other added support, your sensors, army patrolling, but if you still have that fence check is good enough to close it up for your neighbor, so that angazongena kwakho, it's equal to a fence here double up. That one we can accept as a quality fence if me and my neighbor are having problems with unnecessary breaches, but not the border of a South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Honorable Somo, are your issues related to the issues that have been raised so that then maybe we just get one set of responses, and then we'll take it from there.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Welcome to all colleagues in the new year, and morning to the minister. My point relates to what the Minister for Home Affairs has indicated, that the rest of his problems, in as far as border management is concerned, the majority of such challenges come from the Bay Bridge related border posts, meaning therefore that the quality, the size, capability, the strength of any infrastructure which seeks to support the management of that border need to be solidified. In the current standing, there is no way that we could somewhat justify the fact that the department would do justice if it does so by only repairing the existing fence. So something else needs to be done there. Secondly, on the report, the indication of holding in abeyance the effect of looking into the two contracts by Magwa Construction and Prof Team, and referring such to Treasury for a blacklisting. What would that mean if you have a reliance on assessing that action from your own internal department, which has failed to manage the contracts themselves, to give you a credible assessment which debar the department from acting immediately in such instances against the two service providers? How can you rely on a defective mechanism internally, which has failed to assist you during the time of the same contract, that they would come again and make assessment for yourselves and dependent on it and make that judgment to say, no, let's leave the whole thing. Let's not blacklist such a contract. And the last issue, Chair, for me, relates to the fact that your forensic audit does itself confirm a number of defective areas, which have been somewhat confirmed by various assessments which have taken place. Why are you taking so long to intervene on something that you know, that you yourselves have confidence to the effect that these matters need some kind of a ratification? And it might be that direct to the minister. I in appreciation of the fact that actions have been taken against individuals who have been found closer to such defects so far. The one interesting part for me is that you're talking about an organization which existed over time beyond your appointment, Madam Minister. Meaning therefore, it's a very endemic system which is at play. You can get rid of individuals, but the misfortunes might remain without any prejudice in the department. What sort of actions are you taking to re-engineer your department towards what is necessary to guarantee ethical conduct based on the capacity that you require to ensure that the department meets the required standards for its own performance? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, colleagues. So let's get the responses from the minister and the acting DG. I think, Minister, you get the anxiety of the colleagues.
Yes.
We can't be thinking about repairing a fence that ordinarily is not fit for purpose.
Yes.
The PICC has indicated such. The SIU report indicates such. Even our own assessment as joint committees, and specifically this committee when we were there, it's very clear, it was very clear that that entire fence was a sham. And it then begs the question, what are you actually repairing? Because sadly, for all intents and purposes, that entire fence has to be stripped. You mean the material used there, we were told, was substandard. And so I mean, the list of anomalies about that fence is longer than the Ten Commandments. And so the question then becomes, what are you actually repairing? And then second to that, how much are you planning to spend on this so-called repairing? Like a nomunye phezgo munye kind of situation, which has got a series of grey areas. I'll come back with other questions. I think the substantive issues have been raised by the colleagues. Let's hand over to the minister. Honorable Lebongwe, wanting to raise a question. All right. Honorable Minister and your team, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I certainly share the anxiety of the committee. And I have also already expressed to the department that I do not accept the proposal that we repair and replace. Chairperson, we have learned lessons out of this. And one of the lessons for us going forward is the transversal management of all borderline fences of our country. And therefore, the engagement at ministerial level. As we are reporting to the committee today, we are now also part of the Justice and Security Cluster Ministers that deals with security issues, and that committee will be meeting very soon in February. Also, I've had an engagement with the Department of Defense. And again, we agreed with the Department of Defense, like the minister said to Scopa the last time, that that fence is not fit for purpose. So any replacement, any repair to fix the mess at Baybridge will not be decided by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure alone. Because the Department of Defense is the user department, and therefore they play a major role in agreeing or advising us on solutions and specification to the fence. So those consultations are ongoing. Also, we have called for a meeting with the minister, I've called for a meeting with the Minister of Home Affairs. Because if you look at the Border Management Authority Act that is just has been signed into law by the president, and you look at that act and you look at what is the role and function of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, it's hardly mentioned. So we are now having a joint meeting with the Justice and Security Cluster that includes the Department of Defense, that includes the Department of Home Affairs, and also the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. But certainly, we cannot go back and use that same quality fence, poor quality fence, to replace and repair. And Honorable Mente is correct, it will be irregular expenditure. So I think, Chairperson, in the next meeting, we will certainly be able to put more facts before you of a plan, because the plan must be able to deal what I think Honorable Van Minnen has asked as to while we are doing the site clearance and the planning for long, medium term, what are we doing in the interim? We need to find an interim solution as all of these departments together. And that is what the meeting is about in mid-February. And we will certainly come and report to SCOPA, like we have committed to do. I'll answer one more question, two more questions about Melissa Whitehead. No, she is not part of, she's employed in terms of Section 12A of the Public Service Act, and therefore it is dealt differently and it's attended to by the state attorneys. Just on the question of Honorable Somia, yes, I have admitted last year that we have got serious structural and management problems in the department. Yes, we have introduced some systems and there are little green shoots coming up here and there. But I now have also the support, Honorable Members, of the External Audit Committee, which has just presented to me a report a week ago about the state of affairs within the department. And based on the report of the External Affairs, I mean the External Audit Committee, I've also sought help from National Treasury. In discussions with National Treasury as to what outside services or outside help can we bring into the department, because that is really what the department needs at this time. It is outside help that can disrupt this poor management within the department. And again, Chair, Honorable Somia, those are in discussions. In fact, I've just discussed it this morning again with the acting DG and said that we need to convene that meeting as soon as possible. But that is how desperate we are. The Deputy Minister is also driving what we call a change management system within the department. And again, the External Audit Committee is assisting us there, because the findings of the External Audit Committee really is that a lot of recommendations have been made by the External Audit Committee over the years, going back as far as 2012. The problem has been the implementation of those recommendations from internal audit and external audit. So as we go forward, Honorable Somia, we will continue to brief the committee on the remedial action, on the remedial action also from recommendations from the Auditor General management letters. We have also put a plan, action plan in place to deal with the Auditor General findings of the financial year 2018-2019. Because again, there's a history and a repetitive history whereby the recommendations of the Auditor General is ignored, the recommendations of the external audit is ignored, and together with the senior management led by the acting DG, we are slowly beginning to get to terms to that, Honourable Members. But I certainly share your anxiety that we cannot, based on the technical report, they've done a scoping in December 2020, where they've actually made an assessment of the state of defense. And those slides were shown to the committee right in the beginning. And I will also, Honorable Khadebe, make a copy of that assessment report that we've done in December. We can make that available to the committee, including the photographs. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll give over to the acting DG to fill in some of the other issues.
Thank you very much, Minister.
All right, acting DG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll respond in the main to the issues of restriction. I just want to touch on one point in relation to recommendation number 2 and the rectification of the physical defects. I want to point out that the condition assessment that is being spoken about in the response to the recommendations is pursuant to the committee's recommendation that all physical defects are rectified in line with the applicable regulations. So our technical condition assessment is in response to the recommendation rather than a desire to actually use the fence. I just wanted to point that out, Chairperson. Then moving on to the issue of restriction from doing business. What I want to say, Chairperson, is that in terms of restriction from doing business, there's a process that we follow in terms of our Circular 40 of 2019, and that circular is based on due process and the relevant different elements of restriction contained in the Treasury regulations and Regulation 14 of the PPPFA. And our involvement of National Treasury is premised on the fact that National Treasury maintains what they call the database of restricted suppliers. So when we conclude the process, it is Treasury that endorses the restriction and Treasury that ratifies the decision of the Department to restrict. So that is the reason for the involvement of National Treasury. What we do within the Department, we force to first of all consider all the evidence separately from the investigation by the restriction committee, and we are also compelled to invite the suppliers, who in this instance is Magua Construction and Profteam, to make representations to us in terms of administrative justice and PAJA as to why they should not be restricted. So we've almost got to, through an independent process, repeat the entire investigation in some instances in order to give these companies the opportunity to make representations as to why they shouldn't be restricted. And in our experience, the bigger companies are using the big legal firms to challenge the organization. So restriction is becoming a very complex process, and because of the fairness of our systems, we've got to follow that, pedantically follow that due process in order to bring about restriction. But what I want to assure the committee is that we will see through, and we've had experience with this with a few earlier investigations of the pain that is necessary to bring about restriction, but we are committed to doing this. I also want to complement that by talking about the existing contracts. We are following a stepped-up process. We've engaged our construction management branch and the relevant project managers who are managing the various contracts awarded to these two companies. And the next step is legal services as well as internal audit, that we've not let it go. Our internal audit has been instructed to finish an audit in a short space of time. I'm hoping by the end of February they'll be done with this, to give us a second opinion about the companies and whether they conduct themselves in an ethical manner and they've complied with all the requirements and obligations in terms of their contracts with the department. So we've not let it alone. We'll follow a step process, and we'll only continue with the contracts if we are satisfied beyond a doubt that we have no reason to want to restrict them. Or even cancel the existing contracts. So we are merely following the due process, and we want to, at the tail end, to ensure that our processes stand up to scrutiny. That's with respect to restriction, Chairperson, and the onerous processes involved. There was also a question about the issue of integration and whether there are interim solutions in place. And the Bay Bridge border fence project was intended in itself to be an interim solution pending the long-term integrated project. So that is where we are at this point in time. We'll have to engage the Department of Defense to determine what they want to do regarding this particular area. And it's likely that with respect to the entire borderline included in our site clearance process, that we'll go straight into a long-term solution because of the cost involved. And because of our experience with this particular project, and that is why we've gone out, we plan to go out as we've presented in our slides with a request for information before the end of March to call on the companies and members of the public to propose border fence solutions to work together with patrol systems as well as sensors and to look at best practice on how we could best secure the border in a cost-effective manner. So I just wanted to touch on that as well. And then, Chairperson, I think the Minister has covered the other aspects, and I wanted to reflect mainly on the restriction processes, as well as cancellation of existing contracts and what the thinking is there, and to assure the committee that we're far from close that file, that we follow in due process, and we want to achieve a positive result at the end. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Babu Samir?
You know where I'm off.
Well, my network keeps jumping, so I thought the acting DJ was still online. All right, let's get Honorable Siwisa, Honorable Van Minen, and Honorable Mente for follow-ups.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity that you are giving me. Minister, in our meeting last year with the PC of Public Works, I don't remember what the question was, but the response to the question was charges have been reversed due to improper channels being followed against the officials. So does it mean now the charges that you are talking about, the proper channels have been followed, and then we are going to get a progress report on that? Most of my questions were asked by Honorable Umende, but I have one concern, which is what guarantee does the department give that the contracts that are already existing are on board by these companies that are being mentioned? Because taking into consideration that throughout the process of the Bay Bridge, we've been given the projection that everything is on board, everything is going according to the way it's supposed to go. So what guarantee does the department give us that the ones that are already running now, everything is on board? Or are we also going to wait for a moment whereby we'll go and have an oversight or a report will come, and then we'll find that there's been wasteful expenditure, there's been certain procedures were never followed? Because we know that this contractor has been working for, has been under the government or working for government, or has been given contracts for the past 30 years. So it's already been there. We are aware that it's working most of the ports of entries. What guarantee do we have that at the later stage we won't be sitting with a mess that we are sitting with at this moment with the Bay Bridge? Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. Honorable Van Minen.
Thank you very much. My follow-up is something that the acting DG was saying regarding the fact that the assessment regarding the recommendations to repair the fence is pursuant to the committee's recommendations regarding the repairs rather than a desire to use the fence. If you could please just clarify what he means by that, particularly in light of there potentially not having been a recommendation by the committee, what would their approach have been to that? And then in terms of the long-term project that he was talking about, to find a solution to issues that we have up there, Given the fact that we don't seem to have the same issues on the other side of our border fences, being with Namibia and Botswana, surely that should indicate that long-term what one should be looking at is not necessarily just trying to block the spaces off, but actually ensuring that people no longer feel the need to constantly incur over the borders, so that one actually ends up with a situation like one has in the rest of the country where there isn't that pressure to constantly cross over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Van Minen. Honourable Mendel and then Honourable Active.
Thank you, Chair. Van Minen has asked already one of the questions in terms of this was done because we asked for it, but there's no desire of using the fence. My concern is I'm not so sure if the acting DG understands the damage that corruption does to this country. One, I would agree with him to say they are now undertaking a process of, or rather embarking on a process of auditing existing contracts. And by the end of February, they will be giving us that report to ascertain if those contracts are in line with the financial regulations of this country, TFMA and the Treasury regulations. But my problem with this particular service provider, Chair, you have a house, you have a service provider which maintains your plumbing, and then you give them another contract to maintain your electrification process. Then the day you call them to come and work on your swimming pool, they gave you inflated prices, the very same company. And you want to tell me that you are going to stop the swimming pool because you caught them, and trust that no, they will be loyal to you where your plumbing and your electrification is concerned. You now just established that the person is a thief and you want to keep them for the other projects, but you don't want to keep them for this particular project where you have caught them. It does not make sense. And another thing, DG, is the fact that you made mention of the fact that these big companies are using big law firms. The big law firms are available to everyone. They are available to you too. It's logic. It's common sense. I do not know then when it comes to legal people and reading of the contracts. You catch a thief, a person stealing from you, but you still want to use them because you think they did not steal from you when they were working with Project 1 and Project 2, but on Project 3 you find that they are stealing. There can't be any legal standing that can say, no, you can't remove them or stop their contracts because the other two contracts are solid, they are legit. This person is doing a continuous maintenance of your things. Now you are stopping them, you're catching them that they are thieves. What guarantee do you have that they won't even come back to mess up the work that they have done in retaliation to you taking your money from them, and in retaliation to you catching them and are calling the police on them? You know, I watched the chair and I was very ashamed. I watched the tribunal the other day where there was an argument of that particular company, which did bait bridge fence and the tribunal. And I could sense that in terms of the facts that were put there are the facts of the desktop are not the fact that we went there to see. We saw them. We touched the fence, like Hadebe said. But the facts that were put there, you would see that, you are talking to people who just did a desktop information research and compiled a document to go and argue at court. Can we take our job serious and make sure that whoever we hire is the person who knows what they are talking about, but they are not going to sit on a desktop or watch TV or read newspapers, then they gather facts to go and argue at court. Obviously, at court, they are going to clean the court with you. They just want to sweep you away. So that's the problem we are having. Can we have people that are serious? And these people cannot continue having contracts with the state. They are thieves. How do you keep them and say, no, we can use them for other contracts because the other contracts look solid, they look legitimate? They cannot be legit if they are offered by thieves. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Hart Davis, thanks, Honorable Mendes.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps our request, Chair, was misunderstood, or it shouldn't be misunderstood, because we all know for a fact now that that fence is not fit for purpose, and we did not get value for money. So I don't think at any point this committee will therefore seek to suggest that repair that which is not fit for purpose, repair that which did not give us value for money. I'd like to get an understanding when the acting DG saying it's an interim measure, it's not meant for long-term solution, and how long it's the interim measure, how long do they envisage that this fence is going to last for? And if it's okay in South African context to spend close to 40 million as an interim measure, at least let us do an honorable thing and get value for money. Let us get a fence that is fit for purpose. That's what we meant when we say fix the fence. And that's what we want as our intention when we're saying repair. Get a proper fence if it's going to be an interim measure. Let it be value for money. Let it be fit for purpose. We know for a fact that the strength of that fence was compromised and the quality, it was stretched beyond its quality. When you're going to fix it, are you going to fix that as well, the strength? Remember, the fence was meant to be 2.2 meters. It is currently 1.8. Are you going to extend and add the missing part into that fence to ensure that it becomes 2.2? Are you going to ensure that it goes back to its original strength of protecting not the border, but the buildings? And it's ideal for such purpose, because currently, as things stand, that's not a border fence. And they've used a wrong, Chair, I must emphasize this point, a wrong specification was used. That specification is not meant for a border fence. You are going to recoup money from Magwa Construction. If you're going to get your money back, at least get a fence that is fit for purpose. Don't get your money and still do a shady work. That's what we are requesting. And I think our intention should be explicit, Chair. If there are any that are not clear, we must make our intentions clear so that we avoid any ambiguities to be quoted out of context that we are doing it because we have requested it to be done. Thank you.
All right. No, thank you very much, Honorable colleagues. Just a few questions on my part, very pointed. When Acting DG, the Restriction Committee, has it met? If so, when, and what's the update on, because I must stress, Minister, I get a sense that there's no urgency in dealing with these matters, given the gravity of the situation, and also to the extent to which this is one of the most glaring breaches the PFMA amongst others, and instances of corruption really, which
came about because of the pandemic, I would imagine that we have to move with a particular speed. And then, of course, on the issues of the ministerial advisor, Minister Whitehead, Minister, I think you will provide clarity here, because some of the information before us is that there were allegations against Ms. Whitehead when she was in the city of Cape Town insofar as the MyCity bus project was concerned, issues around irregular influencing of process. And then that she resigned in the middle of that probe or the disciplinary process. Why I raise that is because this committee, we are just fundamentally opposed to people migrating from one sphere of government to one government department to another without their disciplinary processes having arrived at a logical legal conclusion from where they have come from. So if that is the case, then it will cast a new light in terms of why we are then concerned about this particular issue and her involvement on these matters. And so if we can get clarity on that as well. Colleagues, on the issues you raise about National Treasury, I agree. We have not enjoyed favorable cooperation from National Treasury in this matter. We'll have to look at that. And then there is the issue of the outstanding matters of the DG. We will probably then have to get a report from the presidency on that insofar as how far that issue has gone, so that it runs parallel with the updates we are receiving on these other disciplinary matters. And then I think we'll probably then assess what we have received today and prepare a complimentary report to accompany the report, which will be presented to the House at the first available opportunity. But I think really, I seated here listening to all these things, I mean, the only we assure you we will do this. We are committed to doing that. I do not get a sense of urgency on any of the matters. That is what in itself lends credibility then to the fact that the corruption and the involvement of Mauha Construction specifically in that department, its tentacles run very, very far and very deep. I'm not receiving this report with any comfort, actually. If I can say the least, I'm not convinced that we are making significant headway and moving with the necessary speed on this matter. There's just no urgency. Right, Honourable Minister, let's get responses from you and your team on the issues that have been raised, and then if there's any other matter, we will raise it, or otherwise we will bring the meeting to an end. So, Honourable Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. Honourable Chairperson, I agree with you about the urgency. I had a meeting with the department yesterday, and I've asked them exactly the same question. When did the restriction committee meet? When are they meeting again? By when will this letter go to National Treasury? And I've asked them to, and I told them that the committee will ask the same question. And I've asked them that today they must be prepared to give those dates to both myself and to the committee as to when this committee met, and when will this process be finished so that the request can go to National Treasury to do the blacklisting. The second one, Honourable Chair, I can't answer you. I will certainly get a report that I can present to the committee about the Melissa Whitehead. As you know, I also left the city. I won all my court cases, by the way, in the High Court in Cape Town. So I've cleared my name completely. So I will obviously let a chairperson have a copy of the report, which I will source from her legal representatives and give it to you. Honorable Khadebe, I want to assure the committee that any interim solution will not include the existing fence that's not fit for purpose. That must be very clear, because it will be irregular expenditure if we continue with that. So I want to give the committee the assurance. I've also disagreed last night with the department to say it's not going to be. But what are we doing to answer the question of what must happen in the interim? And as I said, the lesson that we've learned is the transversal management of the borders has now been institutionalized, with the Department of Public Works becoming part of the Justice Security Cluster and all of that. So in the interim, honorable members, the request for information will go out before the end of March. And the reason why we are going out to the request for information on how to secure our borders is because we want to test the market. We want to see what alternatives do we have in the market that can be used other than this fence that was not fit for purpose. The second one, chairperson, that's also under consideration with the interministerial team, is that we want to take this border project and so that we look at all the borders of South Africa, over 3,000 kilometers, and that we then want to register this as a strategic infrastructure project. What that will mean, honorable members, is that this project will then qualify in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, and it will also qualify for the procedures and processes in Schedule 2 of the Infrastructure Development Act. And that is also under consideration. Secondly, when we do that, we have to then do some project preparation that can produce a project that is bankable, that we're able to go out into the market to go and look for funding. We do know that our fiscus is in a very bad space at the moment, but that should not be a reason why we don't look for other alternatives. And we have gone out to the market, chairperson, with the 62 strategic infrastructure projects that we have gazetted, and we've been able to raise 430 billion. So we want to bring the broader border management and the fence or whatever infrastructure we're going to use, we want to bring it into this process to make sure that we get a bankable project. And I'm sure we'll be able to take it to the international finance institutions, to the local banks. So that is what is currently under consideration as far as finding an interim solution, but also find a quick interim solution. Because the people of South Africa are also screaming out to government to say, do something about the porous borders. And we are listening, and that's why we have to change that from this long-term plan whereby the first planning phase will now be concluded in at the end of June 2021. But that is also important because it's prescribed as to what we need to do. So, chairperson, I really look forward to continuous updates to the committee. But where I want to agree with you is that we need to drive urgency into dealing with these porous border fences of South Africa. I will give over to the acting DG to answer the other questions. But I think, honorable chairperson, the progress around the disciplinary matters. In the case of Melissa Whitehead, like we said, that's been dealt by the state attorney. And the state attorney has appointed a chairperson and an initiator so that we follow an independent process. So we are at the mercy of the, not at the mercy, but we are working together with the state attorney. And just last week, I was given a briefing by the initiator of the process as to progress where they are. I will stop there, Honorable Chairperson. Would you permit me to ask the acting DG to take over?
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, through you, I want to endorse what the Minister's inputs and not repeat what he's already said. I hear the concerns about the continued utilization of the existing contractors, and I want to assure the committee that our internal audit process will generate a report by the end of the month, and we will be able to deal with the matter of the current contracts once and for all, and either endorse or refute the view of our construction management branch that all is good, so that we have an alternative view, an independent voice from the internal audit, and we undertake to provide that report by the end of the month. With respect to...
No. I think the pointed question is, when did your restriction committee meet?
Yes, I'm going there, Chairperson.
You've interacted with National Treasury on this matter. Can we actually get pointed responses from you? Because the assurances that you are giving us are inconsistent with what you have reported. And the pace of things has not moved with the kind of urgency that is required. Here now you are generating one report at the end of the month. The question becomes, what has been the holdup?
Yes, Chairperson, we've already made inquiries from our construction management branch about the level of performance of the existing contractors and whether there are any contracts where non-performance or non-compliance has been detected. And the response we've received is that there are no anomalies with respect to the older contracts awarded to these two companies. And we requested our internal audit unit to also conduct an audit to validate the response and the viewpoint we've received from our construction branch. But the minister also raised the concern that we need an independent audit with respect
how
to these two companies.
How many projects are we speaking about, Chair?
Chairperson, in total, there are 19 projects that were awarded before the Bay Bridge investigation to these two companies.
And
I believe
value?
It's 10 and 9 contracts to these two companies. So what we are saying is we've been through internal process. I beg your pardon, Kevin.
The value of those, the value,
The value, my recollection, Chairperson, I'll be able to tell you towards the end of the meeting, but I believe it's about 400 million between the two. But I'll validate it before the meeting. I have the papers sitting around me. After I've spoken, I will look at the documents to validate those numbers. So that's the issue, Chairperson.
Wait, acting please. I just want to clear the words here. 1 second, you'll get to that. So, 19 projects, 10 and 9 between the two, 400 million. And the only one they ever bungled on was the border fence. They've done everything else well. So they've got a track record of doing great work. And then, boom, all of a sudden, these trusted steeds of the department go on and bungle on the Bay Bridge for the post fence. Why does that... Doesn't that sound odd to you, Acting DG? It doesn't raise any alarm that they, because I think that the independent assessment will probably give us a better picture.
Yes,
and we probably need to ascertain, we want a schedule of these projects, where they are, what they were for, and assess all of them. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, because
the other question
becomes, Were these 19 projects awarded consistent with due process? Were they regularly appointed? Because I want to put it to you, we don't trust Makwa Construction. Let me just be very frank with you. We don't. And we 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 of the fundamental view that they have got cronies in the department. And that is why it was easy for them to have been given the Bainbridge Border Post fence project without due process, because they are in cahoots with elements in the department. So I take very little comfort in the fact that there's confidence that the 19 projects are fine, and that we would have received value for money for the 400 million, and that they are only blunder, because to then, it explains why then the slow movement is that, well, they bungled on one project, everything else is fine. And so let's just sort of hope that this matter falls away. No, it's not going to happen. So just that must be understood very clear, living here, that we are not going to allow a situation where Mahwa Construction or any of its elements are treated with kids' gloves. So you can proceed, DG.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, we hold the same view, and that is why we've commissioned the audit after our assessment, internal assessment in our construction project management branch revealed no exceptions. The decision was taken to refer it to internal audit to provide an independent view of this particular matter. So this file is not closed, and we will revert to the committee chairperson on the outcome of that process and respect the concerns that have been expressed. Chairperson, moving on to the issue of restriction and the issue of treasury. The treasury would only come at the tail end after we conclude the process and we take the decision that we warranted to restrict the company. We then refer it to National Treasury to make the final decision and to place the company on the list of restricted service providers. The date commence. Since August, this committee has been considering the information. And the delay, Chairperson, if one can refer to it as that, is the fact that the committee is requesting all the reports and all the annexes pertaining to the Bainbridge investigation on the one hand. At the same time, we also had the disciplinary processes unfolding where the staff were provided with provisional charges, also asking for information. And we were guided by the state attorney about what kind of information we should release in order not to compromise the disciplinary process by releasing inappropriate information to the restriction committee. It was all about information being released. But we are clear about that, Chairperson. We're moving forward with respect to both restricting the companies as well as cancelling existing contracts. We want to be guided very particularly by legal arguments to ensure that we don't burn our fingers in our quest to restrict them from doing business or cancelling existing contracts where we don't have a proper and sound legal basis. So, Chairperson, we are following due process, but I also appreciate the lack of urgency that is being communicated by the level of progress being achieved, and the minister has also raised it with us. And what we do is that we will give timelines in all our activities, including our reports to the SCOPA. Going forward, everything will have a deadline and a timeline. And this afternoon, stuff, our key stakeholders is our legal services, the state attorney, the SIU, the restriction committee, and internal audit. Those are the five different units or external organizations supporting this process. And we will engage them all today still to communicate the sense of urgency and to bring about those deadlines and timelines so we fast-track all of our processes and we don't have these concerns expressed, because we do appreciate the importance, Chairperson, and we want to assure you and the committee that we'll respect timelines and show a sense of urgency going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, colleagues, are there any other issues that you would like to raise?
Chairperson?
Busami, you may proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. It really looks like that the minister is facing an uphill battle into a systematic instance that deals with entrenched conduct of contract management, and the instance of a persistent approach of taking time in as far as dealing with the wrongdoing is concerned. Today we've met with the minister, and in today's meeting, I would want to derive some undertaking in the area that we have raised, which would need specifically, that's my view, specifically the minister's attention to pull with all instances that take the department towards wrong failing. That the minister should undertake to the committee to go back and rectify all the areas that we have identified that need urgency in terms of attendance. So that if you look into the department standing in the instance of management, how they would take a long route on a simple matter which seeks to deal with matters that could be dealt with within no time. So my view is that the minister must undertake to take these things into her hands, going back, bring that report which highlights critical areas of attendance to improve the current situation in as far as the department is concerned. I really have this feeling that even herself, even if she does not like what is taking place in the department, the myriad steps which ought to be taken internally would infringe to her capability to deal with those matters. So this is the time for her to find that space and get back to us with a clear programmed approach to attend to all those matters which we have identified as the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that is quite what we'll do. We're going to develop a further reporting schedule on it. And like I said, we're going to have to do a supplementary report or an annexure report to accompany the one that is due to the House. Because clearly there are matters which are not receiving attention. And I think that if the minister is saying she raised similar issues yesterday, and the department is not disputing that, we are raising those issues today, then quite clearly we are dealing with a department which is, for lack of a better term, hard-headed.
If you remember,
I don't think we should be really raising the issues we are raising today if all of us are on the same page. I would hate a situation to be associated with a project which is a national embarrassment, a blunder of epic proportions. It's embarrassing. I would want to shape up very quickly, clean up the mess, and restore a semblance of integrity and public dignity. But somehow we have to sit here and be subjected to artificial, long-winded processes. No. In fact, I don't think this is the note we want to start the year on. It's just not. Let us not pretend as though we are ignorant to the corruption that took place at Bait Bridge. Because if we are in agreement on that, as we should be, as we are, that things went fundamentally wrong at Bait Bridge, we should not then be having this sort of laissez-faire attitude to the issue. Why are we trying to find a neat little haystack here? As if this is a new matter. That is fundamentally acting PG and your team. If come the next report or next meeting and we are not satisfied, I can assure you we will make specific recommendations about yourselves. This is the final warning. Shape up or ship out. These issues must be dealt with speed, with urgency, and brought to a conclusion so that you can move on to the next pressing issues that the department is faced with. You've got a myriad of issues which you should be dealing with. Your prestige program on its own is concerning. We're also still going to come to that. There are issues that have been raised before about the functionality of your offices. Cleaners being processing invoices. All those things, we still have to go back to all those issues. So let's therefore not use the bait bridge issue as a stumbling block to us dealing with other issues. Unless, of course, you enjoy appearing before us. I mean, you know, then it may explain why there's this. Move with speed. Sort these matters out. I think it's as simple as that, colleagues. But really, let's just move with speed. So as I'm saying, certain issues you will conclude at the end of the month. So it's good that if a report at the end of February, and then you will have 2 weeks to collate it, then you come back. Come back at that point with a clear and succinct report. If not, then there will be, I think you will be on direct collision course with us. Don't frustrate us so that we don't frustrate you. I think I've before said that we are the only committee that says to public service, render us jobless by doing the right things. If you do the right things, we'll have no job. We are the only people who want to be jobless. But quite frankly, this on its own is frustrating. Right, colleagues? If there are any other matters on your part, on your end, or the other issues that, of course, the SIU is present, and I think that they will lean on the report and realize that we are asking them to investigate all the MAHWA-related contracts which are before the, which they have with the department. So we will be in communication with the SIU on that score, so that we can close this chapter. So that is something that we'll have to deal with SIU. So I think we will speak during the course of the week. All right, honourable colleagues, are you fine?
Can I say something, Chair?
It will come to you, Minister. That's not a problem. Colleagues, are you good? All right, honourable Minister, we'll hand over to you.
Thank you, honourable Chair and honourable members. Honourable Chair, my instruction from the Deputy Minister and myself to the Department is that all future reports to any committee of Parliament must include dates. I've actually asked the Acting DG to get calendars for every senior manager because it must include dates. That the committees do not want to hear what we will be doing. The committees want to hear what we are doing and how far are we with that process. So the template of reporting will no longer be the storytelling methodology that is being adopted by the department. Chairperson, and I don't want to complain, but you know, sometimes I have to send the reports back, and just in the week I told the department, I'm not a grammar teacher. I can't be editing your submissions. And, you know, I asked them to put in the dates.
the DM myself requested them again last night. Now today we hear somewhere in August, but somewhere there must be a date. Then also, Chairperson, that the how we are moving forward at the executive authority level is based on the key priority of government. One of the seven key priorities is to build a capable and an ethical state. And that is what we are working towards. And sometimes if you do it, you are being accused of interfering in the department when you have to intervene when you see things are not going right. So as far as that seven key priorities are concerned, Chairperson, we will continue to look at, and I always refer senior managers to Section 38 of the Public Finance Management Act, where the accounting part of who is accountable for what, we need to adhere to that. But Chairperson, we need all the help that we can get. I appreciate your strong words and direct and honest assessment. As the Deputy Minister myself, we will continue to try our best, Chairperson. But, you know, and we mustn't give up hope. For the sake of the people of our country, we must continue to push that we build this developmental state that must be delivered by civil servants. And we will continue to do that without, let me qualify this, Chairperson, without abdicating my role and the DM's role as the executive authority. We have put a role to play. We are accountable to Parliament, and we will continue to work hard, Chairperson, so that we pull this department right once and for all. So once again, Chairperson, honourable members, thank you for the opportunity. It's really an understatement to say that we have got troubled honourable members, Somia, but we are working on that. Thank you very much, and God bless.
All right, thank you very much. I had not seen the Deputy Minister. We welcome her as well, and thank you for her attendance this morning. All right, colleagues, are there any other issues that you would like to raise?
That's the Honourable Patricia Delil, I know, Chair. Thank you.
All right, let's leave you in the city of Cape Town.
Chair.
Honourable Somia?
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks to the Minister. One unrelated matter, which relates to maybe your department, and say it's not. There was a time when a number of companies, big companies, were found to have faltered through the competition law, and were fined some related amounts for such a kind of a behavior. Would you have any knowledge? Well, you were a mayor at that time, but now you're a minister. You were a mayor at that time, now you're a minister. But you might have, as part of your department, some knowledge as to what has taken place such commitments which were made at the time by such companies who were fined by the competition tribunal. If there's been any progress around such a kind of payments, and what such monies are doing currently, more so that we have so much of a challenge in as far as fiscal is concerned. You might choose to answer that question now, or that's in the purview of the chair, or you might want to provide an answer at some stage if you
would choose to. I thought that, let me just ask that unrelated, but a question of interest from my side. Thank you very much.
Now, consistent with the Honorable Hadebe's resounding endorsement of the minister, let us hand over to her. I'm sure she will indicate if she's in a position to respond. Honorable Minister?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, I am in a position to respond. It relates to the building of the 2010 World Cup Stadium, where there was a lot of collusion amongst private companies. But, you know, when it's in the private sector, they call it collusion. When it's in the public sector, it's called corruption. Arising out of that collusion, there was a settlement between government and all of these private companies that resulted into the formation of the Terasano Trust Fund, where all of these companies are supposed to be making donations to that fund that can be used for transformation of the built environment and also for the skilling up of built environment officials. Chairperson, I have prepared a report that I can share with the committee for the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council that's chaired by the President. Many of those companies are not paying into that fund. They have not kept to their commitments in the settlement agreement. There is no visible evidence of any projects of transformation within the built environment where these companies, through the settlement agreement, has committed themselves. So the Terasano Fund, I have now written also to Minister Patel, because the Competition Commission is under his jurisdiction, and asking for a meeting to present the Terasano Trust Fund report to him. It's just not working. I have sent about 20 questions to the Terasano Trust to fund, including a donation that they have made to the Solidarity Fund without following due process in terms of getting permission through the board, and the composition of the board consists of both private sector and government. So things are not in order there, Chairperson. So I thank Honour Somia for the question, but if the committee would like to have any further information, I can share that information with you. I think it will be good for the committee also to question the settlement agreement that was reached and also the implementation of the settlement agreement. I have got proof of millions of rands that are standing from these companies not paying what they've committed to pay to government for transformation of the built environment. I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
All right. No, thank you very much. Let's just get that report once it is available, and then members will have a look at it, and then our research team will probe further and prepare a briefing note for members consistent with the case question, and then we'll determine whether it's an issue within our jurisdiction, and then we'll have a look at it. But I think the response of the minister at this point suffices. And of course, Minister, you are right. Corruption is corruption, regardless of who does it. And the state does not do business with the state. It does business with the private sector / tenderpreneurs. And so corruption is corruption. I mean, it's always interesting. The reporting has got particular nuances when it's out there. And that's what, causes confusion, which is, the extent of corruption is not fully gauged because it's not fully called out. And I think so the point you raise is fundamentally important. Right, colleagues, I would like to thank the Minister, Minister Dilil, Deputy Minister Kivit, Acting DG, and the team from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure for appearing before us this morning on the Bay Bridge-related matters. We will determine when they will return, but of course they've issues which will be finalized at the end of the month, and we'll look at our report and then we'll make a determination. So they will appear before us again soon. And of course, we are still going to also process their annual report as well. So there's also those issues which are still before us. So we'd like to thank them very much. Thank you very much. Colleagues, the draft program will be circulated. We've received all your inputs. To an extent, we are negotiating dates and so that there's availability. We are waiting for, we'll also be dealing with the PPE issues, which we're trying to avoid unwarranted or last-minute cancellations of our meetings and postponements, because any date that we lose as this committee is worth more than can be measured. So we need to make maximum use of all our time. So the program will be circulated to members. And of course, there are oversights which are still due to us that we still have to do. We will look at those. So colleagues, we will be receiving that draft program for your input. I would like to thank you very much, colleagues. If there are no other matters on your part that you would like to raise, we will have an early day, and if I may then bring the meeting to an end, subject to no other matters on your part. Going once, going twice, going thrice, right, colleagues? We will meet tomorrow with the Auditor General on a briefing on the state-owned entities' audit outcomes. And we will meet tomorrow at 9. Is it 9 o'clock, Ms. Dombey, or 9:30 tomorrow?
9:30.
All right. Tomorrow morning, Auditor General is briefing us on the audit outcomes of the state-owned entities, and then we will have, I think, presentations of the AG have already been circulated. So, and Mam Zibola has been kind enough to reshare them for us as well. In the WhatsApp group. So I think we all have them. So on that note, colleagues, thank you very much. Yes?
Thank you, Chair.